Dieter Kurtenbach, Logan Murdoch with you after the Warriors lose to the Toronto Raptors 131-128 in one hell of a basketball game. Logan, immediately, we did not watch the game together. What were your thoughts on that contest?
Kevin Durant is really, really good.
What?
It's like really, 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 really good.
Kevin Durant, 144 points in the last three games. Last guy to score over 140 in three games combined was?
Kobe Bryant.
Kobe Bryant, 2007.
Yes.
He's all over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was one exceptional basketball game. But the one thing I couldn't take out of my head as that entire thing was happening was, Steph Curry would sure have an impact on that game if he were playing. And I think Draymond Green would too. And what about Alphonso McKinney? And what about Boogie Cousins? Like, as much as everyone wanted to be like, oh, I can't wait until this NBA Finals. It's like, yeah, so long as the same team show up, it would be an interesting game. But
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Is the Warriors' best win of the season?
They lost.
I know, but I know that.
No, you were being clever.
I was
being a smartass. Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
No, because those games over Sacramento and Orlando felt pretty big. Like, because Steph is coming back, it just doesn't feel as important, right? Because no matter what would have happened, it would have been like, doesn't matter, Steph's coming back. They would have won that game, right? Okay, let's say they don't turn the ball over five times in overtime, and Andre Iguodala doesn't fulfill everything I've been saying for the last week. Like, let's just say that happens. I don't think the emotion changes at all. I think that they don't care. I think it's good that they fought. I think that it's a positive. Like, they're certainly not down, but they can't really get that. This team doesn't really know how to get that high. Like, they know what winning a title feels like. They know that this doesn't matter. They can get down for sure, because now it's like, whoa, things are in doubt. Stuff is in flux, but they can't be like, hell yeah, we can do this. Like, they know they can do it. The only team that can beat them is themselves. So with Steph coming back on Saturday, I just don't think that this game really meant that much to them. So it was interesting to see that they actually had some fight. Like, that's encouraging as someone who has to watch them every day. But like, I think that particularly that win over Portland that broke the losing streak where they looked awesome. Like, that one, right, I think meant more to this team just because they actually needed a win. Whereas in this one, it did not matter what the outcome was. Though I guess you can only say that because they played hard at the end and made it close and went to overtime.
They had no business winning this game, Dieter.
It was nonsense. I mean, Durant scores 51. Like, and Durant was ludicrous. I mean, he pulled up at the midcourt logo and knocked one in for no good reason. Just he just felt like it. And like, but here's the thing. Here's the one thing. Like, Klay missed his last five shots. Like, they had a chance to not just tie that game. They had a chance to, like, straight up win it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think – I mean, another thing, the biggest thing – we'll get to Klay in a second. But the biggest thing that I saw of Kevin, he only had one turnover tonight. And that could have been that probably was debatable.
Right.
Because it did look like he went off of Kawhi Leonard. He was absolutely ludicrous. And it was at some points of the game watching it, I was just laughing. Because especially after that shot in the corner, when he just took it around, it just looked like a desperation shot.
That was some Curry over Anthony Davis 2005 playoffs – or 2015 playoffs stuff going on there.
That was ridiculous, and it was Durant's game. It was probably Durant's best game as a Warrior.
I don't know, man. He had that game against Portland last year that they also lost, where he scored like 54, I think.
Yeah, no, he scored. It wasn't 54.
He scored over 50.
Yeah, I think he scored. He might have scored at 50. I can check on that, but
doesn't matter. He's dropped 50 before in a Warriors uniform, and like is that his best game of the year? Because you could argue he was better against the Knicks.
Man, listen. I think this was his best game of the season, just for the simple fact that he kept them in the game. And they were down, I think they were down, what, six with like a minute left? And he just goes in and just bang, bang, bang. And he makes two threes.
There was some silliness. Like, Kyle Lowry hit a shot that Kyle Lowry was yelling at the end of. It was a ridiculous shot. He goes into the corners, the left corner, knocks down a three. Raptors go up six with like 57 seconds left. And Lowry's yelling like he just won the game, because he should feel as if they just won the game. And 10 seconds later, Kevin Durant, he got the inbound pass. He ran up the court, knocked a three down right in Kawhi's face. Kawhi was draped all over him. And you're like, well, this dude is on one tonight. Like,
it was ridiculous.
And yet it's not enough.
Yeah.
I'm not blaming Kevin Durant for that, but like, I mean, that it says the state of the team.
Get this. Over his last three games, he is averaging 48 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists.
Wilt Chamberlain numbers.
That is ridiculous. But where do you think that this run goes in the context of his time as a Warrior? These last, what would you call it, three or four games?
This last three or four games will go up there. I do think that we will remember this. I don't think it's as good as that 9-1 run that they had last year when Steph went out for the first time. It felt like Durant was operating on a different level, more so than that. Like, and this is the constant conflict with Durant. Like, it is the Warriors system that won the championship in 2015 and won 73 games in 2016 versus the style of play that Kevin Durant is exceptional at, like perhaps unparalleled at. And they are sometimes contrasting, right? And when they went 9-1, yeah, they slowed it down. And yeah, there was a lot of ISO for Durant, but it felt like the mesh point was perfectly found. And that was really the first time, in my opinion. They never really figured it out that first year. They just got away with it because they were so much more talented. And then they kind of had to figure it out last year. And that 9-1 was really, I don't know, like it felt like there was a breakthrough with all of that because Durant was playing out of his mind defensively. Christmas Day last year is as good as I can remember Durant playing because he was so good on the defensive side as well. Yeah. That 9-1 really stands out to me. Of course, the playoffs stand out. This is going to be memorable, though. I don't know where I put it in the hierarchy, but the fact that it's memorable says something.
I just feel like, I mean, where are the Warriors without him in this sense? I mean, yeah, they lost four straight, but it could have been a lot worse if Durant isn't here, right?
Like, that's the crazy part, right? They lose four games, and then, like, they need two wins, both of them just led by Durant, where now they're back atop the Western Conference again.
Yeah.
Like, they're not anymore because of the clip or whatever. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, they're right there. If you were in 14th place, you're three games out of first. Like, it doesn't matter. But that just shows, like, and it goes back to the thing that I was thinking throughout the entire game. Like, the gap between everybody, I mean, I don't know. We saw the Bucks go into Oracle Arena and smoke the Warriors. So I don't want to be too flippant about this. But the Raptors played really, really, really well.
I just want to say before I get into this point, you really want to go to Milwaukee.
No. Listen, all I know is this. My girlfriend, we were watching the game because that's how I work. She's like, oh, Toronto would be great in June. So I'm all in on Toronto now. Like, that would be cool. But like,
yes.
And listen, I've always been all in on Toronto. I'm about those miles. Nevertheless, like, I do think Milwaukee is a better team.
Okay.
I think that they have a higher ceiling. That's my stance.
We'll get to that in a second, but I do have a question to ask you. What is the difference in the NBA, or what is the difference between Curry being out last year and them going on that run that you just mentioned versus this year when he's out? What is the biggest distinct difference in this team, and why it's not the same this year as it was during that stretch last year?
I think this team is more undefined than last year's team. Last year's team was the continuation of that first super team, right? Where they got Durant, like they knew each other. They knew the rhythms. There was a certain rotation that more or less carried over year over year. So the two things that stand out to me in difference are, well, one, okay, three. One, Draymond Green is also out, and that's a huge factor. Two, no David West, which is sort of a tie into the fact that really Kevon Looney is the only guy giving them reliable center minutes. And like,
he's the best center on the roster.
Right? No question at all. And despite the fact that I will stand for Kevon Looney all day, every day, like, we know what he is. Like, he's just a dude on defense, but he's not helping you out all that much on offense. So you lose a level of dynamicism on the offensive end if you're playing a lot of Kevon Looney. He's not a rim runner. He's certainly not going to pull up and
but here's another thing,
shoot a three.
Though. It's weird, though, because he is the best offensive option at the center position.
Yeah, but that says a lot more about the other guys than it does about him, because he hasn't changed. He's just
the
same.
We'll get to soccer report.
But here's the third thing, and I think this is the big one that isn't being discussed enough out of deference to just out of respect to these guys. But like, Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala are showing their age a little bit, and particularly Iguodala, who we all know kind of goes in and out as the regular season goes on. And like, he has earned that right for sure. But man, like, he was playing hard for a while, but man, he just seems a step behind where he was last year when he would even, you know, gear up for a game. And that's concerning. Because they really needed him with Draymond out, with the center, you don't know who they are. When you're playing Damian Lee major minutes, relatively, when you're giving Quinn Cook significant run, and like, Quinn Cook is a lot like, you know, 49ers quarterback Nick Mullins. Like, he comes out, he'll give you a good game every now and again, but like, they know the book on him. And so he's not going to be consistent. He will give you a huge game because he is an exceptional offensive player, but they can attack him on defense. They can really work him out of the game on offense if they make that a key point. Sometimes they'll just let him shoot, and sometimes he'll burn you on it. But, man, they really needed Andre Iguodala and Sean Livingston, really the two true backup point guards, to step up. And I haven't seen it yet. And, like, I'm a big fan of Sean's game. I'm obviously a big fan of Andre's game. But it's not where – well, it's certainly not playoff. Okay, it's certainly not playoff ready at the moment. And I'm having –
I was a bit premature on my tweet. I apologize. I was a bit premature.
Here's the thing. I don't want to read too far into that early tweet where you sent out that he was kind of on a run, because he was. He had like three or four great possessions in a row, right? And we've seen that time and time again. And my statement to you on Twitter was, okay, yes, we've seen this before, and that was pretty damn good, but let's slow our roll. Let's simmer down now a bit. I also don't want to read too much into the turnover after turnover after turnover and overtime. Like, I don't want to go the highs and lows. I'm looking for that middle ground, and that middle ground just isn't as high as it has been in years past. He's just showing his age a little bit, and I don't know if that's him being even more cagey and holding back even more. I don't think that's the case. I think that this is just, father time getting a little, gaining a little bit more ground on Andre Iguodala and gaining a little bit more ground on Sean Livingston. These guys have played major minutes year in and year out. They're playing more than 100 games a year. They've been doing it for a decade. Like, this is what's going to happen. So, but they really need him this year, because you can see the depth on this team is not what it has been in years past. I keep saying this, and it's not a joke at this point. Like, when you're missing Alphonso McKinney, you do not have a deep basketball team. And when you're not as top heavy as you should be, because you don't have Draymond and you don't have Steph and you don't have Boogie, like, you need Andre Iguodala to step up. He's making $16 million a year, and he just hasn't done it yet. And it's not going to matter, but that's the difference with this team.
Right. And I mean, I think if at a microcosm, you're not expecting also Draymond Green to be, well, you are, and Draymond Green has an injury history, but
right,
you're not expecting Steph to be gone and all this stuff. But so, like, if they're at full strength, they're fine. They will be
right.
Fine.
They're top heavy. No one comes within a mile of it.
Exactly. Let's talk about this, though, and specifically this game. Your guy Jonas Jerebko,
who
balled tonight. Balled.
I'm stunned at, like, how consistently good Jonas has been. Like, this was his best game. Mind you, he did miss a three that gave them a chance to go ahead late, but that's not important. Like, he's been, every night he'll give you solid rebounding. He can knock down the three. It has not necessarily been there the entire time, but you have to respect his spacing on the offensive side. The thing I've been surprised about, and I want to hear from you on this, it's been his defense. I think he's been, like, pretty damn competent on the defensive end, and that gives the Warriors, he's not just kind of this white Mo Spates type that they, that they honestly thought they were getting. I did not think he would be this good on defense.
Nah, I mean, that was the rap on him, right? I mean, that he would be a serviceable defender, but he's been playing really, really well.
Yeah.
And he's been what they thought, and I hate to bring this up, but
here it comes. He's gonna slide into those DMs.
It was who they thought Omri Cassidy was going to be, right? I mean, right. They thought that he was going to be the guy that was going to rim run, bring toughness, cut to the basket, hit an occasional three. Jerebko hit three tonight, three threes tonight. Yeah.
20 points for Jonas Jerebko. Like, who saw that coming?
I mean, you did. You have stock in him.
I love how I just got the stock because I'm, like, the whitest guy.
Listen, man.
Anyway, I'll take it, man. I'm not fighting it.
No, but I just think
it's just another white privilege that I got to work with.
He's been the most consistent bench guy that they've had.
For sure.
Especially, it's even more so because he's a perimeter guy. There's not a lot of production from the Warriors perimeter guys outside of their top-heavy scorers.
Well, that's why they're loving Damian Lee, because Damian Lee will actually chuck it.
I have stock in Damian Lee.
I got stock in – oh, damn. You got the headband too? Because that's the
I got the headband.
Like, Damian Lee has athletic limitations. He's not going to help you very much on the defensive side. But he can run off a damn screen. He can put the ball up from beyond the arc. And, like, that is now something that is being treated at a premium on this Warriors team, because they just don't have other guys that will do it. I mean,
remember how, like, when Alfonso McKinney first came onto the scene, we were just so excited to see someone actually shoot the ball.
Imagine what would happen if they have both Damian Lee and Alfonso McKinney on the floor. Like,
just chucking it. We were so happy to see that instead of like, oh, he gets the ball, he's just going to pass it to somebody.
Well, that's the thing. Like, we might as well just call it stock report now because we're going into it. But like, Jordan Bell passed up several dunks. Maybe right, because
let's do this. Hold on. Yeah. You know what? Let's do this. Okay, since we're going to slander my stock, guys, let's just get it right into stock report. Let's go right into stock report.
There it is.
My first guy, Jordan Bell.
Man, he turned down dunks, and he was letting up dunks on the other end. Like, this was supposed to be Jordan Bell's time to shine, and all he did was confirm every single thing that really only guys who are around this team every day are hearing from the coaching staff about how he's just too fast and loose. And that passing up dunks is like, listen,
this hurts.
You want to be too aggressive on the defensive end? Not great. Not a good way to get playing time, but like, you can live with it. So long as you bring that energy on the offensive end, you get back what you give.
Yeah,
Nope.
I mean, this hurts. I mean, because it seemed like every time Serge Ibaka was in his face, he wouldn't even look at the rim.
Serge owned him tonight. Both ends.
Yeah. It was rough, and it was a time for when, because if there was another big that played worse than Jordan Bell, it was Damian Jones, another person who my stock is just going down.
He is the nicest kid. He is the most physically gifted center that they have, and he looks lost.
And the thing is, like, he can be that guy, right? Like,
seen him be that dude.
In theory, he can. What was I gonna say? He can. Yeah. Switch screens, he can block shots, he is physically imposing,
right?
But he fouls a lot, and it seems like the game is going too fast for him,
for sure. 1000%, that's exactly what's happening with him. Now, the interesting thing is, like, it doesn't matter when you have four all-stars on the court with you. Like, you can get away with Damian Jones because all you have to do is run the rim and stand there and let Draymond put you wherever he needs to put you. Like, you can get away with that. But by the time Steph comes back and the time Draymond comes back, like, there's going to be a week, and then Boogie's in. And like,
I posed this question to Mark Medina earlier this week, and it was, who is the odd center out when Boogie comes back?
But here's the thing. It can't be Damian, because Damian's the only center under contract for next year.
That's true. But
that's
he is not he. But he's not the most consistent. I mean, at least you see potential in Jordan Bell, and you know what you're going to get from Looney, right?
Yeah, but here, Looney is not losing any time. Looney should get more time, but he's not going to lose any of it, right? They know exactly what they're getting from him. Every time he goes on the court, the Warriors just get a little bit better. It's counterintuitive when you watch how Looney plays, but they just get a little bit better. He's a dude. He is a man out there. And just having somebody.
Quick aside. Have we decided who has Kevon Looney stock? Because I had Kevon Looney stock last year. I just want to say
we have joint custody of Kevon Looney stock.
Okay, I have definitely earned my stock with him.
No, I listen.
And I just want to say that.
And I've been standing for Looney for 2 years now. So here we are. Go back to my KNBR archives. You'll see there is Kevon Looney was the future. Now, that's all I'm saying. Big again, shared custody. We're figuring it out. You know, it's tough. It's tough. It's tough having a two household family, but here we are. Yeah. Who gets them on Christmas? No, that's not the point. two Christmases for Kevon Looney. like, Looney's not going to lose any time. And I don't think that they can afford to bench Jones. Now, listen, I think that that's the right play. I, in fact, think that he probably needs some time in Santa Cruz, if we're being totally honest, just to get his confidence back.
Because he had that in the preseason, right? He had the
he was great against Sacramento, right?
He was great against the Lakers too. Oh, are you talking about this season?
Yeah, like last, like season? I'm talking like earlier this week. He had a really good game against the Kings or the Magic, one or the other. And
but the constant thing, I think it might have been against the Magic. Let me see. Let's go.
It doesn't matter. Whatever that game was, all I remember was Kareth Burke, the esteemed.
It was Sacramento.
He had a really bad game against Portland the night before or whatever it was. And he had talked to his mom, and she had just been like, be confident, be yourself, and be assertive. And he went out there, and he just like dropped 12 in the first quarter and was just a dude. And it's so you know it's there. Like, there's nothing that this guy can't do. It's just about the mental conditioning. And listen, I'm not going to try to psychoanalyze the poor kid, because I think, frankly, he's he doesn't need basketball to get by in this world. But
no, he's smart. He's very, very, very smart kid.
Smarter than us. Yeah,
I think that because I've talked to some people about that. I remember talking to Steve Kerr about a story and on Damian. Yeah. And the biggest thing that Steve was like, we just need him to be consistent. That's why we brought him to Santa Cruz. He has all the physical tools. We need him to be a consistent rebounder to play in this league. And he just hasn't been that. And that goes right into the 13 points.
Right.
You know, he has a 13.6 rebound game. The next night, he has 4 points and right. 4 rebounds. You know what I mean? And I think that that's something that he has to find a consistency. We need every game, they need him to go to the block and be aggressive every time, like he was in that Sacramento game where he's just going to his spot and just being a dude. And right. He just hasn't been that. And I think that. And that's why I think he might be the odd man out when Boogie comes back, just for the simple fact that
I agree with you. Like, he should be the odd man out. Though that said, like, they have shown a propensity time and time again to put Jordan at the end of the bench.
That's true.
Like, why wouldn't they do that again?
But also, when the time they have also proven to put Jordan in the game when the chips are down. Case in point, Houston. Case in point, the NBA Finals.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, Jordan can play that role. Like, what is Damian's role if he's not the starting center on this team, as weird as that sounds?
And what has Steve Kerr's mantra been this whole season? We already know what we're going to get out of Jordan. We already know what we're going to get out of Kevon. We're not even worried about that right now. It's all about what Damian's going to do.
Well, if they know what they're getting out of Jordan, he's still finding his ass at the end of the bench this often. Like, I honestly feel like they're just going to keep giving Jones this run. You can experiment with Jones so long as you have 4 All-Stars out there. But it looks really rough when you just have Clay and Kevin and you don't have Draymond. And the same applies to Jordan, if I'm being totally honest, because Jordan, I think Draymond does more for Jordan Bell than perhaps anybody else on the team. When they play together, Jordan can be that hyper-aggressive type. He can go after things on the perimeter and try to jump back and get a weak side block because Draymond's going to cover up for him because he sees the game 3 steps ahead of everybody else, and he can always be in position to make it look as if Jordan's staying within the game. But he's not. But you can get away with it. Again, it's Draymond Green. Andre Iguodala gives a little bit of that, but not so much in the low post. So I don't know. I don't know how it goes. Maybe they alternate. Maybe it's a super matchup thing like Kerr has done in the past, or maybe he just straight up gets Zaza'd and just finds himself out of favor. I still think, and I know that this is not what Steve has said time and time again, but like I still think that the Warriors start Boogie off the bench and try to use him in sort of a quasi David West role in the second and early fourth. I think that's probably the best play.
I don't know if that's going to work. I think if the goal is what they say and it's literally what Steve Kerr said a few weeks back, mm-hmm. if the goal is to get Boogie a huge contract, it is not going to be coming off the bench.
Yeah, but like Boogie is coming off of an Achilles injury. He's going to be on a minutes restriction when he comes in. Like, there's no doubt about that. And what do the Warriors really need? They need a second unit. Like, they're still figuring it out. Before Steph and Dre got injured, they weren't sure if it was supposed to be Kevin who was anchoring that second unit, if it was Clay who was supposed to be doing it. Now they're coming back. They still don't have any idea because they couldn't figure anything out with Steph and Draymond out. Like, why can't that be Boogie just for a couple of weeks until he gets his legs back under him, and then they just go full bore because they don't want to push the pedal to the metal too early with this 5-man unit. They want to drag this thing out a little bit, no?
I think at the very least, though, they can stagger him to the second unit as well, just in a similar way they did Clay last year.
That's true.
When Clay started the second quarter with the second unit.
That's probably it.
Yeah, I don't think it has to be like Boog. You go on the bench. You come off the bench.
I think it would be interesting to see off the start, though, because that's another thing too. Like, maybe I don't know. We haven't talked to Damian about this. I don't think he'd ever admit to it if we're being totally honest. Like, knowing that Boog is sitting right there, like, Looney's going to go about his business because Looney's been living on a 1-year contract for the last 2 years. Like, he knows how to be a pro. Jordan's been Jordan, but like, he knows, you know, this is a guy who got traded on draft night and he kind of knows the business too. Damian, this is, he's been groomed and groomed and groomed for a year that isn't this year. He's being groomed for next year. I don't know if they're going to give up after 20-something games on their center for next year. He's their starting center next year unless they go out and get somebody on a minimum contract.
Also, I think this is something else that's being not underlooked. I don't know if that even is even a word, but this is something that hasn't been to the surface. This is really Damian's rookie season, if we're being quite honest.
I get what you're saying.
Yes, in the sense that he's never been to all NBA cities. He's never taken a flight to, you know what I'm saying? He's never had the thing where, like, I know I'm going to be here for a month straight.
That's the thing. Like, he knows he's going to be at the NBA level for a month straight. He doesn't know if he's going to be the starter for a month straight. He does not have job security on this team. Now, mind you, he hasn't earned any, but he didn't have any. So maybe that's part of it too, where it's just like everyone knows Boogie's coming and that Boogie is going to get the majority of Draymond's going to close at center if it isn't Boogie. So you know where the depth chart is. I don't know. That has to have something to do with it, where they have full confidence in him, but they're still, I don't know, working on him. It's a very weird situation. This doesn't happen on other teams, straight up. But that's the Warriors.
The Warriors are not any other team.
Yeah, no other team signed Boogie Cousins. Like no other team is like, we have a developmental center for next year because of our cap crunch that we can just get away with because we have four All-Stars. And oh, by the way, we also have one of the most skilled big men in the history of basketball coming off of an injury that we were able to sign for the league minimum or a mid-level. just because, you know, why the hell not? And because he wanted to come here just so he can get a big contract next year. Like, he's a mercenary. Like, what a weird, weird year.
I don't think this has ever happened ever in NBA history.
I mean, I'm sure it has, but like not at this level. Durant should not be on the Warriors. That is not a subjective take. Like, that is an objective thing. Like, the only reason Kevin Durant is on the Warriors is because the NBA Players Association, led by LeBron James and Chris Paul, decided that they wanted to get their big payday early. They didn't want to smooth over the cap. And so what happened is been this ripple effect, and the Warriors, it could not have played out better for the Golden State Warriors. And they get $20 million in cap space the year that Kevin Durant is a free agent. They sign Kevin Durant. The gap between them and everybody else is massive. It's slowly closing, just as finances and everything else comes into, you know, the rest of the league figures out how the Warriors have been playing for the last 5 years. All this stuff is slowly closing the gap. And maybe next year is the year that there's somebody competing. But like, then they just add Boogie Cousins.
That's scandalous, man.
We talked about it all summer. I don't think we understand how preposterous this is. Like, while keeping Andre Iguodala and keeping Sean Livingston to the point where we can be disappointed in those guys. Like, they didn't lose anybody, and they added Boogie Cousins. They lost Harrison Barnes and Andrew Bogut, but they added Kevin Durant. This has to come back at some point, and it is going to be ugly when it does. But for, like, the next 3-4 years, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think this is a very preposterous year. What do you think is going to happen when Steph comes back? Is it going to be one of the, like, are they going to go on a run? What do you project happening going forward?
Well, I mean, we talked about, like, the big difference between the last time it was Durant and Clay without Steph and not was Draymond. So I don't know if they go on a real run until Draymond comes back. What I'm interested to see is kind of that mesh point between Durant and the Warriors, the quote-unquote capital W Warriors, with that joyful flowing offense, because so many times during this stretch with Steph out, they would get down into the slog, right? They didn't pass the ball enough. It was too much ISO ball. It didn't look like the Warriors. Steph comes back, they're immediately going to start looking like the Warriors again. But that conflict has always been present between Kevin kind of wanting to do what he wants to do. And I thought he actually was out of that a little bit against the Raptors. I thought he did a really good job of not necessarily initiating offense until maybe the fourth quarter. But him and Andre Iguodala had a good thing going in a 1-2 game. I thought he was really working well off the ball. That kind of, he didn't take a lot of dribbles. Like, that kind of stuff gives me a lot of hope that they're going to immediately click, that there won't be the grinding of the gears that we have seen before in situations like this. I don't know if they go on a run. Draymond comes back. I think they get up for that game on Christmas because that will kind of feel like the first time everyone's legs are under them, health permitting. Maybe Boogie.
The first time everyone's eyes is on that team.
Totally.
Yeah.
Like, there won't be an NFL game that day. Like, everyone's going to be watching. Like, everyone wants to see Lakers. I don't think the Lakers are a very good team, but damned if they aren't entertaining. Like, that game is going to be something. They're going to want to put on a show. I think that's when it starts. And the other thing, too, I mean, the big thing that's in the back of the heads is, like, who cares if they go on a 13-game winning streak? Like, they don't care. They don't. Yeah.
Like, it's also, it's expected, too. Like, it's not like they're not going to get a pat on the back for going, oh, the Warriors, that's on a 13-game winning streak.
Yeah, congratulations. You did exactly what you're supposed to do. You're favored in every game. like, I think that they'll do it just to prove to themselves that they can do it. But I think it's gonna be a little bit. Like, Detroit has always played them well. Blake Griffin is a tough matchup. No Draymond, so that's a thing. They're gonna have to figure that out. I don't know. They have a tough little stretch here. But I would expect this team to go on an 8-9-10 game winning streak here sometime around or over the new year, and then probably pack it in a little bit, because it doesn't take much to build a pretty sizable lead in the Western Conference these days. Where's your head at?
I mean, last year I think that they go on a bit of a run. They play a lot better than they have. I had them going 4-1 on this trip, just knowing that.
Well, they got to go 4-0 down the stretch, baby.
Yeah, but kind of assuming. No, I did that taking into account Toronto, kind of assuming Steph wasn't going to play in Toronto. So I think that they're going to. I think that they win. They sweep the rest of this road trip.
Right.
And
I mean, honestly, like, there's no reason to think that they'll ever lose when you have Kevin Durant and Steph Curry on the same team.
That's a fair point. I think that they go on a bit of a run. They play much better than they did. I don't think they lose four straight. I'll tell you that much.
I'm fascinated for that game against the Bucks on the seventh. Oh, man. Because, like, we saw what the Raptors are, right? Like, that was, I think we can agree, that was probably the Raptors' best shot. And they barely got out of there. No Steph, no Draymond, no Boogie. The Bucks absolutely rolled over a healthy Warriors team. If they do the same thing in Milwaukee with everybody back, sans Boogie, but, you know, they do the same thing, now we're having a very different conversation. Because the first time it was a novelty, the second time that's a warning.
And they're going to be up for that game. But here's another thing that I think, and we're going to get out of here on this. Remember when Steve, like, there's just a confidence brewing out of this Warriors team, even when they lose. I think that Steve Kerr said the other night, he was like, last year we just milked it the whole last season.
For sure.
And we're the number one team in the playoffs defensively. Like, this team could turn it on. Even if they lose to Milwaukee in December, they're not going to care about that when it comes to
doing. I don't think that I do think it's interesting, though, as a point. Like, because the gap is a little bit tighter, and all the things that I was saying earlier, and all the things we've been talking about all year, like, yeah, they're really, really good. But I don't know if they're as good as they were last year. And this was still a team that got pushed to seven. We don't know what Boogie's going to be for this team. This is a team that got pushed to seven. They were on the brink of elimination for eight straight quarters. Like, man, the Bucks. If the Bucks come out and do it, like, there's no reason to fade the Bucks at all. You could say, oh, they're going to be Toronto in five. And I'm not saying that the Bucks
really
are better than...
You really want to go to Toronto? I mean, you really want to go to Milwaukee? Stop fighting it.
I'm telling you right now. No, this is entirely... If they played all these games at a neutral site in Edmonton, Canada, like, I'd be happy to go there too. Like, the Bucks, I think, are the best team in the Eastern Conference. Toronto's really good. Don't get me wrong. And I'm the entire time I was watching that game, not only was I thinking about how Steph and Draymond weren't in it, all I could think about is, man, I cannot wait for that Bucks-Raptors Eastern Conference Finals, because I don't think the Celtics and the Sixers are getting there. Man, that series is going to be awesome. I think the Bucks are probably the better team. Let's be close. Don't get me wrong. I think it goes seven. But, like, if the Bucks get through, like, the Bucks just have the Warriors' number, and it would make that series a lot more interesting than I think a Raptors series would be. I know I'm pushing it out way too far. But, man, if that game on the 7th looks anything like that game at Oracle Arena, it's going to be really hard to shut me up about the Bucks.
Okay. I mean, it's a hard time right now shutting you up about the Bucks, but I mean...
Sorry, man. This has nothing to do with Milwaukee in the summer. I will wax poetic about that when we get to that point. Right now,
you better take me to Chicago if that happens, brother.
It's not an issue. You got plenty of places to stay in the Shy. But, man, the Bucks are, like, crazy deep. I keep saying Steph's the MVP, but, like, Giannis is the MVP right now. Like, Steph's played half of the games. Like, yeah, he's been pretty valuable with, you know, when they're missing him, but, like, let's be honest, it's Giannis. And they're super well coached. I don't know, man. Like, I'm drinking the Bucks Kool-Aid. We'll see. So much more time. Like, I don't know, six more months.
All right. Well, there is six more months of Dieter Kurtenbach making every Warriors HQ podcast a Bucks podcast.
Yeah.
We will see you.
They're the only team the Warriors really have to care about. This is
they're the only team we need, Sean. But yeah. I don't even know. You get us out of this.
Sorry. I brought us into it. I'll take us out. The city of Milwaukee is the only American city to have three socialist mayors. No. I don't know if Mark Medina and you are going to be doing a pod after Steph's return. I don't know if I'm involved in that at all. I don't think we should be doing the budget publicly, but here we are. Either way.
You mean you're doing this. This is all you. You were like, you brought them into this.
The royal we. Medina's going to text me right now. Like, I've been listening in.
What are you doing?
Yeah. Steph comes back Saturday against the Pistons. There may or may not be audio content. I do know there will be video content and written content off of that game. You can check all of that stuff out on the Mercury News website, the East Bay Times website. You should like and subscribe and share and tell your friends and rate and review and all that stuff. The Warriors HQ podcast on iTunes and any other place that semi-reputable podcasts can be found. Logan, tell them where you're at on Twitter.
I am at Logan M. Murdoch on Twitter. I am going to be listening to this new Meek Mill album.
What is Drake on it? The rumor
Drake is on it, and what's crazy is when you called me, I was listening to the song. So
I heard a little bit of it. Okay, so Logan will have a full 1,500 word report on
Medium.
on the beef being squashed. I am going to go back to just some classic prog rock, early 1990s, baby. Put on my flannel.
Okay. I just want to say I have something for the listeners.
Yeah.
I have a Spotify playlist starting December 1st, a Christmas playlist. Every day I'm dropping a new song until we get to Christmas.
Ooh, the 25 Days of Christmas with Logan Murdoch. I will be subscribing.
All right.
You're dropping that on Twitter. I am at D Kurtenbach, KURTENBACH on Twitter. This has been the Warriors HQ podcast. Logan, tell them what we are.
Tap in. We are at the Bay Area News Group.
We're out.